This is the Michael K. Show podcast.
I'm joyful and fun.
Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2.
That's cool, man!
On 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
This is Eli Manning, and the Michael K. Show starts now on 98.7 ESPN.
And a good afternoon, everybody. This is indeed the Michael K. Show. We thank you for joining us on this Monday, May 10th, 2021. Michael K., Don LaGreca, Peter Rosenberg, we're all apart, but we're together for the next 4.5 hours, the other 19 and a half. That's your responsibility, and we start off today with the New York Knicks. What a performance, what a game for the Knicks yesterday, beating a fully loaded Clipper team. George played. Kawhi Leonard played. They wanted to win this game. They got off to an early lead. They led in the second quarter, and the Knicks would not be denied despite the fact that Julius Randle was not hot from the field. He did other things, rebounded, moved the ball around, but until the last three big shots that he hit, he was not the offensive player that the Knicks have come to depend on. And one of the knocks on the Knicks has been, okay, they're beating the bad teams, and there's a lot of bad teams, and that's good enough to put you in contention. Then they will surprise a good team every now and then, because in a regular season, a team's not going to be sharp and wanting to play hard every single day. That was not the case with the Clippers. Clippers were an outstanding team. They were rested. They were on their home court. The Knicks had come off two really bad losses to really good teams. And what'd they do? They would not let go. Derrick Rose had a great game. If you want to sit there as a Knick fan and luxuriate in a victory, luxuriate in that one. The magic number is now 2 to avoid the play-in. A Knick win and a Celtic loss, the Knicks are at least the 6th seed, at least. Now, remember, the Knicks play the Celtics at the end of the regular season, so they could take care of business right there, or they could take care of business tomorrow against the Lakers, and LeBron James is coming back. So another good test. I love the way the Knicks looked yesterday. They did everything you'd want them to do to answer all the concerns and the criticisms. They look great. Guys, that was a big time money win.
No question. Especially after what happened against the Nuggets and the Suns, right? And they were in that Suns game for a while, but you know, the better team really had their way in the fourth quarter. And so you start wondering, like we talked about last week, is this going to be 4 straight losses? Are they going to get sucked back into the play-in? And they answered. They answered a call against a really good Clipper team. And now, at the least, Michael, they're 3-3 on the road, which is exactly what any Knick fan would have taken. Now, maybe you change it because they won the first two games of the road trip, but you go on a 6-game road trip where you got to play the Nuggets and the Suns and the Clippers and the Lakers, and you come back 3-3 and with a chance to go 4-2, that's good stuff.
And, I mean, the game started. They're down 10-0 right out of the gate yesterday. And this just isn't a team that wilts in situations like that. This is the kind of team that goes on the road and wins the games that they're supposed to. And in this case, wins a game that they're not supposed to. So we kind of keep saying it over and over again, but this is not a Knicks team that we've seen in a long time. They are better than I think even those with the highest expectations could have believed.
And the thing that would hearten you about them being able to beat anybody on any given night, don't know about winning a series, but beating anybody on any given night, you watch them yesterday, and you watch the way they play defense, and you watch the way they make Kawhi Leonard work for everything, and Paul George work for everything. All the skill position players on the Clippers had to really grind to get their shot off. And that's a given. Defense doesn't go into slumps. Julius Randle went into a slump yesterday. Couldn't hit the broadside of a barn, but the team plays defense, and there's little sneaky important people. Reggie Bullock, who we had on the air, I think it was last week, he had a monster game yesterday. Derrick Rose is going to go down as one of the best midseason trades the Knicks have ever made. Who'd they give up for him? Dennis Smith Jr. and a second-round pick? They had no use for Dennis Smith Jr. And a second-round pick, you couldn't get a player that's going to contribute the way Derrick Rose has contributed. He's playing like the player he was before he hurt his knee with the Bulls. Last five games, he's averaging 21 points. You know what he's shooting from the field? 64.2%. He's 12 of 19 from the three-point stripe, dishing out about five assists and playing well over the minutes they thought they were going to use him, almost 30 minutes a game. And Sunday, 25 points, 8 assists, 6 rebounds, and that was in 32 minutes. So they're pushing him. And Thibodeau, to show you how important that game was, look how many minutes R.J. Barrett played. Look how many minutes Derrick Rose played. Look how many minutes Reggie Bullock played. They didn't have Quickley yesterday. They didn't have Burks yesterday. And they still had enough to beat a really good Clipper team.
And if Derrick Rose, and listen, I'm not going to start going crazy and assuming that a guy whose career has been in injury plagued throughout, that all of a sudden you're going to get him to be consistently healthy. But I will say this. We've all seen in sports, guys, where a player who you think is kind of at the end of the line ends up on a team that you think it's just some little quick thing, and it turns out it's where they really find their footing and can have a great run. If Derrick Rose is a meaningful part of this team and is healthy, it actually makes you rethink the entire constitution of the team. If he's a 21-point scorer for them, guys, and you could sign up for that for 2 years, and you, obviously you don't know what you're going to get from Derrick Rose and if this is something that lasts beyond this run down the stretch, but doesn't that make you rethink the pieces that they actually have, at least in the immediate?
Well, in the immediate it does, because you know most Knick fans are concerned with Elfrid Payton. And when you look at the statistic plus minus, he's always minus when he's on the court. And Thibodeau will not take him out of the starting lineup because he said his length creates defensive problems, that he also plays defense well. So Elfrid Payton has been a disappointment to them as their point guard. But Thibodeau knows I can still have Rose in the important parts of the game. And that's when he puts him in.
Mm-hmm.
And he finds time for Quickley as well. Over and over and over again, it just proves what this guy has done this year as a coach of the Knicks. I mean, it's the same old story. We don't want to have a party every day for Tom Thibodeau. But if you look at the team, the talent is not overwhelming. But the result is overwhelming. They're ahead of the Heat and they're ahead of the Celtics, two teams that are clearly better talent-wise.
See, that's the thing that really blows me away here, because I just thought eventually the cream would rise to the top and that the Heat and the Celtics, when it meant something, would overtake that four seed and be comfortable going into the playoffs. Now it's the reality is the Celtics are probably going to have to play in the play-in. And they're two back of Miami for six. Now, at least Miami's played better. They've won 7 of their last 10. So they can still creep up. They're only one game back of the Knicks, so the Knicks had to be careful here because they could have not only dropped to the 5 and have home court disadvantage against the Hawks, they could drop to 6 and have to take on the Bucks in the first round. So these wins are very, very important to them. But, you know, we've talked about it. I don't know what's wrong with the Celtics, but the Knicks are proven they belong as the 4 seed. That this is no fluke because they needed these games, Michael. This isn't window dressing. This isn't we're trying to prove that we're this good. They are this good. And they're winning these games because they need to, because there's a big difference dropping to the 6 and taking on the Bucks in the first round. I know they played the Bucks tough this year and they have a win against them, but a fully healthy Bucks team, the Knicks are not beating. And I think everybody knows that. But beating the Hawks and having home court advantage, that's a reality. And that win and the game coming up against the Lakers are important to make sure they solidify that. Because I don't think at this point, Michael, with everything that's been going on, they want to drop to 6 and have to play the Bucks.
It could be the Nets. It could be the Nets. You know, those two teams are tied in the loss column, and the Bucks have the tiebreaker. You don't want to face either of those teams.
Right, and I know the Knicks fans, and I supported them saying we want the Nets. But they'd much rather do it in the second round than have to do it in the first round, especially when they control their own destiny to get home court in the first round against a team that I think they will beat. So you don't want to slip up here. And they've controlled their own destiny to do that now. Win the games that are left. They have 4 games left. Now, that'll be a tough one tomorrow against the Lakers and LeBron. And the Lakers need that game, right, Peter? I mean, they're sitting there right on the cusp. They're only a game back of having to avoid the play-in.
Yep.
So that'll be a tough one.
Yeah, there's so many things going on, and you have to always be careful about, like, purposely trying to end up in a spot, because the Knicks could be 4th, right? And they're not playing the Hawks. They could play the Heat. And I think they would lose to the Heat because the Heat are championship caliber players who were in the finals last year. And I think right now they're starting to find themselves. I mean, the perfect scenario is to finish fourth or fifth and have the Atlanta Hawks finish fourth or fifth.
Right.
Because I think then the Knicks take a first round series, and then they got their legs out under, they have their legs under them, and then they take on a better team in the second round, and they probably lose, but boy, you've put all that equity under your belt now.
But wouldn't you want to get the four, regardless of who you play, just to be able to have home court? And I know you could say, well, what does that matter? The building's not going to be full, but on May 19th, they're expanding it to what, 33%?
Yep.
The Islanders already sent a letter to Cuomo trying to get it expanded to 50%. I mean, who knows, between now and when the playoffs start, how things may happen. And you know what? The way the Knicks fans have responded to their team this year, you tell me you're at 33, 35% at Madison Square Garden, that's going to have an effect because those fans will be heard. And you know what? I would not be shocked if you heard them in Miami because Knicks fans travel. So if you did play Miami, I think there'd be a few Knicks fans that would take the trip to Miami to support their team too. So, you know, you want to make sure you get that four seed and then let the gods determine who you end up playing.
And very quickly about the Brooklyn Nets, they had a huge win on Saturday in Denver. A game they were down, they looked lost, and they dug down and they just played harder. And they slowed down the presumptive MVP. They did what they had to do. It's amazing. Blake Griffin's become a force. Everybody thought it was just like a nothing ad. It's not a nothing ad. He's good from three. He had 20 points against the Nuggets. That's the most that he scored for the Nets other than the debut game on March 21st. So he had 16 of those in the third quarter. He's 4 or 5 from three-point range. He's been playing good defense. That's going to end up being a really big pickup. But the whole key with the Nets, where the whole road is paved for them to go a long way, obviously, is Harden coming back. And there's a chance that Harden could come back. The Nets play back-to-back. They play the Bulls and the Spurs. He might play in one of those games. And that'll give him a couple of games to get his legs under him, and then we see how the big three perform under the spotlight. That's exactly why they were brought together. Yep. It's going to be like they played, what, 8, 9 games together? We'll see. Greatness is supposed to figure things out. I mean, that's what Aaron Boone said about Aaron Judge on Saturday. Greatness figures things out. Let's see these great players figure it out. Then play together, but let's see them figure it out. And wouldn't it be unbelievable if we do see a 3 against a 6 where it's the Nets against the Knicks? I think it would electrify the city. It really would. 1-800-919-3776. Let's go to Tony in Whitestone. Tony.
Hey, Michael. How are you? Hello, Dom. Is Peter off today?
No, he's there. What?
Oh, I didn't see him on the TV.
Oh, you know that what? Happens
I
a lot.
What, I think with you guys... I think. Oh, I'm sorry. I love you too, Peter.
Thank you, buddy.
I think what you guys are dismissing about the Knicks is Derrick Rose becomes the X factor. Nobody ever expected this guy to be averaging over 20 points a game. So, in all honesty, I don't think the Sixers. Because if you look at the Sixers, they lose Embiid, they're done. If you look at the Nets, they lose Durant, they're done. As far as the Bucks go, I'm not really all that up on the Bucks. And one other thing about Gary Sanchez, I'm sorry to be getting off of basketball, is it possible that this guy could have been using steroids and nobody knew?
Well, I mean, why even bring that up? So everybody that's slumping this year, Tony, might have been using steroids? I mean, that's terrible.
And
why would he stop?
Right.
I mean, he's been so bad. That's a terrible thing to say, Tony. I mean, why would you implicate a guy like that just because he hasn't hit? And why would he stop hitting all of a sudden, and then if he was doing anything, why would he stop doing it when he was on his way to being a great player? He was never caught. So I think it's a terrible thing to say. I don't even want to address it because there's no proof of it.
Yeah,
so you're just saying because he was productive at one point,
that's just
he
lazy.
Was doing something wrong. That's weak. That's a weak source of analysis. It really is. Let's go to Sal on Long Island. Sal.
Hey, Michael. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Peter, my favorite guy. Love you guys.
Thanks,
I'm just
thanks.
So excited about the Knicks this year. You know, I talk to you all the time. I thought they'd go 3-3 on the road trip, which I'm happy about. But I'm so happy about the bench. Quigley, Noel, these guys. And we're doing all this without Robinson. I just want to ask you, Michael, you think we could attract any big names this year on the offseason
Subtract big names from the Knicks?
For the Knicks.
I would think that you're going to look at – I mean, they're not going to – there's no big free agents. So you can't look at it that way. You've got to look at people that are unhappy. So who's unhappy? I mean, you could say, well, Bradley Beal was unhappy, but he's not. They're playing great. The Wizards have played very well. Now, Beal's going to miss the next two games, which really does hurt, but Westbrook's been unbelievable. You got to find a player that's a great player that doesn't want to be where he is anymore. And I think what the Knicks have done is they've presented themselves now as a possible destination for that sort of player. And, Don, they haven't been that for 10 years.
No. And now that seems like a fait accompli, right, that they would be amongst the teams that somebody would want to play for. So who's on a team right now that if they got bounced early from the playoffs would say, you know, I don't want to be a part of this now. I want to get out of here and orchestrate something similar to Harden. And if you do that, all of a sudden the Knicks become a team where you might be on their short list of places a guy would want to go. So I don't know. Is there anybody that you're hearing rumblings isn't happy where he is that if they got bounced out of the playoffs early would want an exit?
You always wonder about Damian Lillard.
Mm-hmm.
Just not Devin Booker. I mean, all Phoenix has had a great season. Don't know. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and guess right now. It's just making stuff up and spreading rumors, which we don't want to do. It's about at the end of the season when they have exit meetings and the guy goes, you know, I don't want to be here anymore. That guy now might consider going to the Knicks.
You know, just fantasize for a second. Would Giannis want out if the Bucks had another early exit?
I don't think so. Yeah, he just signed a long-term deal there.
No, well, so did Watson, if you remember.
Yeah. Let's go to Kenny in Jersey. Kenny.
Hey, what's up, fellas? How you doing today?
Good. How are you?
I'm on cloud nine with these Knicks, man. I mean, this is unbelievable. I didn't think that this year I'd be able to enjoy the season the way I've enjoyed it. But it's been a pleasure. The whole season has been a pleasure. But look, hey Mike, I want to ask you a question. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they say you got to be careful of what you ask for, right?
Mm-hmm.
I would like to have, on my wish list, I would like to have Westbrook to go along with Zion in a couple years. Do you think that it changed the dynamic? And is Westbrook coachable to be a winner?
You know? Well, I mean, he's been coachable this year to be a winner, but, you know, you say a couple of years, Kenny. Westbrook's getting old. I mean, you could dream on Zion, but Zion's not leaving the Pelicans for another 3 or 4 years. He's got to have his rookie contract end, and then he's got to sign that second contract, which New Orleans could then match. I don't think he's coming here anytime soon. I mean, the Westbrook thing, I thought Westbrook being added to this team would have been a good thing. Now he's going to average a triple-double this year. He's been unbelievable. Scott Brooks loves him. He's been unbelievable. Let's go to Andy in New Jersey. Andy.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
How you doing?
First time caller. I just wanted to mention that the success of the Knicks is largely in part due to Thibodeau. He obviously, instilled a culture, and he knows how to maximize the bigs.
Well, I would agree. I think this is all Thibodeau. I think he's given Julius Randle a game plan, which he's executed to perfection. I think the reason that Derrick Rose wanted to come here was because of Thibodeau. It's all Thibodeau. I don't want to take anything away from the players, but this roster is not all that different from the Fizdale roster. And Randle fell on his face. RJ Barrett didn't look like the player that he is now. Derrick Rose would not have been here. On and on we go. I mean, this is Thibodeau and his staff. Not just Thibodeau. He's got a really good staff. They work hard. They recognize mismatches. They're constantly studying film. They're never going to be outworked. I'm not going to say they outwork every staff, but they will never be outworked by any staff. It's a big deal. Changing a culture is a big deal. That was the most important thing for them. That's why from the very beginning, the three of us have said, it's important for them to make the playoffs. Just change the way people think about the Knicks, particularly the players in the NBA. Now, all the teams have played them. All the teams know that when they meet the Knicks, they've got to play hard. If they phone in a game, they're going to get run out of the gym. That's what the Knicks do. They make you work hard because they work hard. Now, players that want to skate don't want to work hard. Maybe they want to play for Thibodeau. But But those that want a chance to succeed, remember, Derrick Rose won an MVP under Thibodeau. Let's go to Spike in New Jersey. Spike.
Oh, baby. How good was that? How good was that to watch? Let me tell you a couple of things I observed. Let me tell you. The Derrick Rose deal should get Leon Rose Executive of the Year. What the game plan was after the Phoenix game, the template was set. The opposition pushed Randall, trapped him, ran a zone at him, tried every which way from Sunday. They didn't call any fouls. The Knicks went to the line 9 times. They didn't quit. They spread the floor. I was waiting for Burks or Bullock to get hot. The strategy was brilliant. Keep Bullock near Burke, near Randall. But here's the key, and I told Andrew this. The key was Randall couldn't hit the side of a barn with his shot. But when the bell rang and the money was on the line, 3 out of 3. That was the game. I'm sure you agree with me.
Absolutely. He was amazing down the stretch. And even Thibodeau at the end of the game said, don't tell me he didn't have a good game. He said he did have a good game. Just because you don't score doesn't mean that you can't impact the game. He impacted the game. And the 3 shots down the stretch helped them win the game. Bottom line, this guy works. He pulled down rebounds. I think he had 5 assists. And if you count hockey assists, he probably had 15. He's always moving the ball around when people are double-teaming him. And I think that what the Knicks got a window into in yesterday's game was exactly how they're going to be played during the playoffs. They're going to double on Randall and dare everybody to beat him. So Bullock becomes important. RJ Barrett becomes important. And don't take credit away from the two-headed center that has replaced Robinson. Taj Gibson's been great. He's been great. So they defend well, they play hard, they move the ball, and you know, they even take getting yelled at by Thibodeau. Did you see when Phoenix was on a 9-0 run the game before this one, and R.J. Barrett made a lazy inbounds pass to make it a 9-0 run? It was picked off and scored on. There was a timeout, and Thibodeau actually tore into him at the bench. And these guys don't mind. They want to be coached.
Yeah.
It's important that you want to be coached, Don.
That's the key. There's plenty of good coaches out there, right? But how many teams want to be coached? In a sport now where stars can kind of dictate who their leader is, or sports have devalued the manager like baseball has, that a team wants to be coached. And now they've got a great coach to lead them in the right direction. That's important.
1-800-919-3776 is the number of the Michael K Show on 98.7 ESPN. Is brought to you by GEICO. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. It's also the kind of service you get. Good thing GEICO's been perfecting both for over 75 years. We've got a lot of stuff to do today. I never thought I'd say this as a tease. We have to talk about rats and raccoons.
Okay.
Yeah, we got to talk about that. We got to talk about blatantly lying to the media. We have to talk about a 5-game winning streak. We have to talk about a fan base who's now rallying behind a guy who was behind the lie. So maybe that gets you to be not booed anymore, because what if fans hate worse than a guy who's 0-23? They hate the media. So if you could rally them around the media, all of a sudden you're going to be loved. We're going to talk about a Yankee team that from the 5th spot in the order to the 9th spot in the order cannot hit, but they continue to win, finishing a great, great, great homestand at 7-2. So a lot of good things to touch on. We'll touch on them all, one by one, piece by piece, part by part.
All right.
Yeah.
Yep.
We're touching rats. We're touching raccoons. We're touching it all.
You know, maybe the Mets theme song, Don, could be the old Michael Jackson song, Ben.
Mmm.
An audience, I think, needs to be introduced to that song.
They'll love it.
We'll come back with it.
It's and beautiful a disturbing song. Movie.
Never seen the movie. Love the song.
Because you know Ben. He's always running here and there.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not going to sing the whole song because who would want to hear it? But later on, maybe we'll play it if Anthony could find it.
It must have been one of those moments where Michael Jackson's like, listen, I can write about anything and make it a hit.
Right. At that point, was that song just a dare?
Yeah. I dare you to write a song about a rat. A love song about a rat. Okay, do it. Do it. Oh, okay. Okay, here's the number.
By the way, he voiced over the record version of E.T. also. So aliens, rats. It made no difference at that point. He could do whatever he wanted.
I wonder if he could write a song if he was still here about rat-coons, that, because that's what Lindor called it the next day, rat-coons.
The only thing that Michael Jackson couldn't save musically was if he were to attempt to perform the Knicks theme song.
Go New York, go New York, go.
Go New York, go New York, go cannot be saved by anyone.
I thought it was a terrific song. Terrific. 1-800-919-3776. Join the conversation. We're here for the next 4.5 hours. We're excited. Lead you into the Islander game. It's all good. It's all new. It's all real. Kay LaGreca, Rosenberg, and you right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael Kay Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Well, before we get back to the calls, I'm going to make you feel almost 20 years younger right now.
Okay.
All right? Tim Tebow is about to sign with the Jaguars as a tight end. He has not played in the NFL in 3,053 days. Now, if that doesn't do it for you, you know what's back, right?
No.
Bennifer. Bennifer is back. Ben Affleck and Jennifer Lopez are an item again. Bennifer, after 17 years, back.
Is that true, officially?
Oh, yeah. Yes. It's official.
That's a pretty good deal for Ben.
Well, right. Ben was just with a beautiful woman in Ana de Armas.
No, but the fact that after 17 years, he was able to get J-Lo back. That's pretty good out of him.
By the way, crazy to me that it's been 17 years.
Yeah, I know, right?
I feel like those wacky kids were together yesterday.
I tell you what, though, I feel sorry for Alex. I mean, you want a mourning period. You break up with somebody, you don't just, boom, go into another relationship right away.
You know,
that's
going to
make him feel awful.
It's not what you want.
No. Everybody out there, within the sound of my voice, woman or man, when you break up with somebody, the last thing you want is for them to be into a relationship right away and be happy. There's no way. You're rooting against it.
I agree. However, this is probably the best case scenario that she went back to somebody she had previously been with. So that's a quicker turnaround, right? Like, to meet somebody immediately, it suggests that maybe something was going on before her and Alex broke up.
Oh, well, I don't think that's what people are
really
suggesting.
Really quick, right, Peter? There's no courtship. It's just, hey, she probably just made a call. Hey,
I think that makes me feel worse.
No, makes
gotta yes, make because then you're thinking the whole time she was with me, she really wanted Ben.
Ben was first, so you got to live with that, too. Listen, I talked to Alex, all right? He's good.
All right. Wait,
let me be honest with you.
The conversation
this Clubhouse Confidential is really confidential.
This is the God's honest truth. The last time I spoke with Alex Rodriguez at length, the subject never came up. So it obviously doesn't bother him. Because, of course, the last conversation I had was Clubhouse Confidential, and that wasn't on the table. But point is, I talked to Alex, and believe me, he's good.
I'll tell you what, if you talk to him today, he'd probably say he's good. He's not. Bennifer, back. I'm 43 again.
You know what? Alex is going to be fine. How do we know he's not with somebody?
Listen, Alex is going to be great, but don't tell me that his heart doesn't hurt a little bit today.
Maybe. I don't know.
And also, Don, this is for you. You know what today is, right?
May 10th?
No, but something bigger than May 10th. It's National Golf Day.
God. Is it really?
Yeah.
What a waste of everyone.
We should be playing today. You and I should be playing. We should be on the links today.
You know what? You bring up a good point. You really do.
Go have
drinking a cannon, smoking a, well, whatever you interested in. Today should be the
But then it's National Golf Day, and this is what Greeny tweeted out. And you guys know how I love Greeny, right?
Like no other.
Right now, there's that real sour taste when you throw up in your mouth. This is what he said. Because it tests every part of your mind, psyche, and soul, and thrills you beyond description, even on the days it makes you swear you'll never play again.
You don't think that's a sickness. Honestly, you don't think
he's pushing me to Don. He's pushing me to Don's
side. You don't think that somebody that would tweet that out isn't like mentally ill in some way. Like there's something wrong with him that a game could make you talk that way, feel it all you want, but to just express that to the public that there's something wrong. I mean, seriously, Peter, I almost got you. I got you on the hook here. Come on.
Yeah.
How is that not complete like toolbox behavior?
Can't wait.
It's
school level.
It's cornpone. I love the guy, but whenever anyone goes, I mean, it's almost like even soccer being called the beautiful game is a bit much. Boxing's the sweet science. Everything has their over the top thing, but with golf, I got an update for you. If you're a regular mortal, you're not like a pro golfer. You're just a regular person who plays. The challenging days aren't beautiful. They're a nightmare. They're a waste of 5 hours. You hate yourself. It's not like, and I'm not like, one. I've said this on the air many times, guys. When people who play golf 30 times a year have the nerve to throw their club as if they should be good, it drives me crazy.
Hey.
Like, who do you think you are? Like, it doesn't make sense.
But listen, we all love
but
life,
even me,
right?
Don, even me, I know that I stink. But when I have a day where, like, first tee, I just chunk it. Like, I have to hit my first shot 4 times to get the... You know the day's terrible. It's not fun.
Right.
It's a nightmare.
Like I said, we all love life, right? Especially how great our lives are, right? But if I'm blowing at both ends one day, I don't sit there and, like, tweet out, hey, having a tough day, but this is just a challenge. This is going to make me a better person. No, you're sick. You're disgusted with yourself, and you're hoping to get better. You don't sit there and spin the bat. You don't spin the day that you're sick and go, well, this is all part of the process. This is all part. No, stop it. You have a bad day on the golf course, you want to quit. You don't quit because, again, you hate your life and your wife, and you got to continue to play. Tweet that out. Why don't you tweet that out?
Greeny really loves his wife, it seems like.
I don't know. It's on the table.
Well, that's tough, Don. That's
Peter,
tough.
I know his family.
Did Don just say blowing at both ends? Is that what he said?
That's an expression when you are doing such. Wow. That's a bad day, right? Michael, you would describe that as a bad day.
I think I would love those sort of days. Those are weight loss days.
See? Now maybe this is the golf side of Michael. You know, trying to spin positive. Believe me, I've seen you ill, Michael. You find no positive in it whatsoever. Zero. Those days where you pop on the air, Peter, I should be in an iron lung today, but I'm doing the show.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
I never got a sense during those days that Michael was enjoying the day.
Well, Greeny says he enjoys the day when he's frustrated.
No, he just says that to himself. He's lying to himself, which is the ultimate lie. It's the ultimate sin.
We need a pick-me-up right now. So you know where we get that? We go to the Grifter in Connecticut. Yeah!
I'm here.
Griffin!
Hey, what's up?
How are you?
Good, I got breaking news.
What's that?
Hold
on.
I need
a breaking news sounder.
Oh, he's calling for sounders. Go ahead.
Okay. Because it's National Golf Day, guess where Paul O'Neill is?
Where?
Golfing, getting on the golf swing.
Where is he?
He's at the golf place, getting on his golf swing.
Does he want you reporting on his whereabouts publicly?
I don't know where he is. I'm just saying it because we all know where what Paul O'Neill does.
Got it. Okay. It's speculation.
We all know what Paul O'Neill does. We all know what he does.
Right.
Did you have a big weekend, Griffin? I mean, like, really run it hard?
Any frolicking in the ocean?
No, I didn't.
Now, this is a big call for you, Griffin, because I'm sure you were aware that Friday's call was met with really a lot of love. People really enjoyed your call Friday. So tough to follow that up.
And if I'm going to do this every day,
wow,
I need Andrew or Anthony to give me like a theme song or something.
Wow. He's
and
calling for drops
a pushy, Grifter,
and
okay?
a theme song. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, hold on. If I'm doing this, why can't I have it?
You know what?
Earn it, my friend. You had one good phone call. You don't get a theme song with just one good phone call. You've got to have a series.
We're very early in the process here, Griff. Very early in the process.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
But don't ruin it by start making demands.
I asked you a key question on Friday that you never answered, ever. And you want a theme song. You didn't answer the key question. I said, have you ever wanted to kill your brother? You didn't answer the question.
Because it's a shit.
Wow. It is.
Wow.
You really, have you asked Don, hey, have you ever wanted to kill?
He has asked me that question.
I have asked him, and he broke his brother's leg. So, you know, that he tells the truth.
But kill his brother? Literally, like, murder his brother? No.
These things happen.
Griffin, real quick, what was your highlight of the weekend?
My highlight of the weekend was watching the Heat make sure that they stay out of that play-in tournament. Jimmy Butler and Duncan Robinson, we were on point, and we were taking care of the Celtics, and now if we can do that tomorrow, guess who's looking at the play-in tournament? Peter Rosenberg.
That's right. I really need the Celtics to beat the Heat tomorrow, but let's be honest, I've given up on this season, so.
You've given up on the season?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
we're defending these conference champions. We're a threat, and so are the New York Knicks because of what Tom Thibodeau is bringing his culture. If he's not coach of the year, then something seriously went wrong.
No, let's pump the brakes on that because what's happening in Utah, it's happening
Phoenix.
In, you know.
You're right.
There's a lot. I love that. There's a lot of good candidates out there. I think Thibodeau deserves a tremendous consideration here, but.
Yeah, he does.
It's not a no-brainer, is it, Michael?
No. Griffin, I have another question
right.
to ask you.
What?
Have you ever physically hurt another human being?
No, I've never physically hurt another human being. I got in a collision with a human being when I played basketball.
Ooh. Really? So you bring it hard in the paint?
Oh, my. What happened is I went up, and Ethan also went up, and we both landed. I slammed down hard. He ended up rolling his ankle, but I ended up hurting my back really bad.
Oh.
What'd you say his name was?
Ethan.
Ethan. Ethan and Griffin. That's quite the NBA matchup.
Here's the one thing I'll say, Griffin, before we let you go, because we don't want this to damage what happened Friday. We do need a picture of you. Because I do think that when you call, at the very least, we should have a picture of you.
Agreed.
Could you email Andrew a good picture of you?
Yeah, I can email a picture.
Okay, let's do that.
I want a picture of your brother, too,
just to see. What, you want both pictures of
We're going to put you on hold, Griffin, because I got to tell you, this phone call was really subpar. But I do have a new nickname for it. He's Air Griffin now. Because he went up against
Eric.
He went up against Ethan to such a level that he could not even control the fall. He fell right down on his back.
You know what it's like, Michael, to try to meet Ethan at the rim?
No, I can't. I've never gotten up that high.
Yeah,
it's Air Griff.
Air Griff.
Andrew, what was the play that happened in the last year? It's all been a blur that we said may have been the best block of all time in a game. Do you guys remember the play I'm talking about?
No. But put it at the level of the LeBron in the final a couple years ago.
Yeah.
At that level?
Yes.
I mean, wow. The athleticism.
Well, at no point during the collision did their feet leave the ground.
No. They were up there, Don.
So
they were with the gods.
Air Griff stuff. It was more ground Griff.
No.
That's his basketball.
They were with
game.
The gods.
Now, I don't know if you saw this, that the Mets have placed Jacob DeGrom on the 10-day IL.
Smart.
With the
side tight. I think it's a smart move. You know why? Because then if he feels better in 7 days, there's not that compulsion or impulse to, let's start him now. Make sure you shut him down for 10 days.
No.
This guy's too valuable.
Way too valuable.
Let's take a brief timeout. Think about Air Griff.
Ground Griff.
No, that's in football. He's Ground Griff.
I'm worried that call's going to be panned.
Yeah, but you know, I think the Griff-Ethan matchup really does bring it to another level.
Thanks.
Vex Trade says he thinks Karma Chameleon by the Culture Club should be the theme song for Griff, and I could not agree more.
Well, why Karma Chameleon?
Because it just fits.
I got to think more.
He's going to think more. We'll be back right here on Yes at 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Now, the MRI on DeGrom was clean. The Mets, just out of an abundance of caution, put him on the 10-day IL, which is important. That's what they should do. We'll talk more Mets in the 3 o'clock hour. Let's go to Mike in Neskonset. What's up, Mike?
Hey, Michael, how you doing? First time talking to you. Thank you for taking my phone
aboard,
call.
Man.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's kind of exciting. I have a statement and a question. I want to know what your opinion is.
Okay.
In a basketball, the way basketball is built now, I mean, when you look at Golden State, when they were dominant, you look at when LeBron was moving from city to city, you look at players that have joined the Nets. I find it, as a basketball fan and as a big Knicks fan, even more rewarding that it seems the Knicks are being built the old-fashioned way. And what I mean by that is they have a coach now who's – he's not only – I mean, Randall and other players haven't only produced – he's gotten through players of all ages on this team. I mean, he's got a crafty veterans like Derrick Rose and Randall. He's got, I mean, Nerlens Noel, Taj Gibson. Mm-hmm. And then you go to younger players like Obi Toppin, Quickly. You got RJ Barrett. This coach has gotten through to all levels of players on the Knicks. Everyone has responded. Everyone is playing better. Everyone has responded. And as a big Knicks fan, I find it more rewarding than just having that team full of superstars. Wow. While every team wants great players on their team, no doubt, and I would like a few to maybe we can pick a few up over the offseason, the upcoming years. Again, I'm repeating myself, but I just find it more rewarding.
Well, I understand what you're saying, but remember one thing, though, Mike. The Nets were building the team the same way, and then when the opportunity existed for them to bring in the stars, they did, and that's what's going to happen with the Knicks if they take the next step. The Warriors built the team the right way, too, and then they brought in Kevin Durant. It became a super team. So, I mean, that's what every team aims for. I think, Don, you would agree, the culture of the Knicks was important to change the perception of the Knicks amongst NBA players.
But if you are happy with where they are, because I think this is the most you're going to be able to get as presently constituted. With the talent they have, with the coaching they have, you are looking at a team that could fight for the four seed. But if they want to get up there with the big boys and win a championship, they're going to have to add. And one of the ways you might add is convincing players to come here in a similar fashion the way the Nets and the Lakers did it. So don't all of a sudden start talking about, I love the way we built it. We didn't have to do that. You may still have to do that. Because I've been in this town long enough, so have you, Michael, that 3-4 years of finishing as the four seed and getting bounced in the second round is going to frustrate a lot of people, and they're going to be like, we need to take the next step. And I don't think you can get any more out of this team than Thibodeau's gotten out of. So you're now going to have to add. Now, how do you do that? Is it a trade? Is it drafting somebody and having that player become a superstar? Or is it convincing someone that's unhappy someplace else or a free agent to come here and play? And as you said, there's no real free agent. So is it getting a Lowry? Is it getting a Butler? Is it getting somebody like that to come here? And then are you starting to play that kind of super team type of thing in order to get from point A to point B?
Yeah, it's hard to build a team from scratch and have them become a super team. The closest thing to that would be what the Warriors did. They got lucky with a draft pick in Curry. Then they had Thompson. They had Draymond Green. Then they added Iguodala. So, I mean, that team was essentially, their stars were built from the draft. Then they brought in Kevin Durant, and it took on a completely different feel. Jason in New Jersey. Jason.
Hey, guys. How's it going? Thanks for taking my call, as always.
You got it. What's up?
So I'm here to talk about golf, and I think Peter would know this because he's a golfer himself. Mm. I compare golf to like a drug kind of, because when you play good in golf, and you know this, Peter, when you've had your best round, you're going nuts, and it's so fun, the high of playing and doing well. Also, Michael, I don't think you're gonna end up golfing. It seems like you are a quitter.
Wow.
But I'll just say that.
Wow. Strong.
I think you are a quitter.
It's hard for me to argue that.
Peter will
know.
But Peter, you know this. When you're playing golf and you're playing bad, you're going nuts, you hate it, and then all of a sudden you go out next week and you play great. It's like the greatest feeling in the world.
No, that's what you always come back for. They always get you. You could play the worst round ever, and if on 18 your chip is beautiful, all of a sudden you feel that you should keep playing. Golf's one of the only sports where you can be bad at the sport, but luck into a shot that looks and feels like a shot from one of the greatest golfers in the world.
See, but that conversation could have also been directed at Don, too, because, you know, Don's done a copious amount of drugs, so he can understand what golf is like.
That's not true.
Well, don't paint me out to be something I'm not, Michael, as if my reputation means nothing and that you could throw something out there like that and have people believe it and then ruin my reputation all for you to get 30 seconds of pleasure. I think that's really something that's...
Didn't you admit on the show that you did meth?
I know I didn't. No.
What'd you say? Mescaline.
Yeah, that completely different things.
Still
okay?
An illegal drug, right?
Hey, Michael, there's a lot of illegal drugs. There's a lot of illegal. I'm sure you sped at one time or another,
well,
right?
You know what? Unless you catch me, you have no idea whether
exactly,
I did
or right back at you. But to the point, I just don't know why it's – I love playing pool. Pool's a very difficult game to play. But I'm not at the water cooler practicing, you know, my pool shot. No, because I'm not a tool, right? It's hard. It's demanding. It can be frustrating at times. But why isn't pool at that level? Why isn't darts at that level? Why isn't – how about this?
Well,
playing
that's
a video game. I can play a video game that is as just as challenging as golf, but I'm a nerd if I do that. Why is golf the only thing that you can do that has some sort of honor and people salivate at just the mere suggestion of it? Where somebody that I respect that is as talented a person and as nice a person as I've ever met, Greenberg, can embarrass himself with a tweet. Well, I don't know, Peter. I don't know why. There's a lot of other things. I love swimming. Do I get out of the pool and then tweet out just how absolutely exhilarating swimming in my pool is?
Why
don't
you do that?
Am I practicing the breaststroke while I'm sitting at the water cooler? No.
Well, that would be weird.
Why isn't golf weird then? Why is this the one thing? If I'm sitting there with my with an imaginary pool cue at the coffee machine, people will be like, somebody should fit him for a straitjacket. Something wrong with him.
Paul O'Neill used to practice his golf swing in right field.
Right. Again.
No, he actually practices regular
swing. And I'm sorry, that's toolbox behavior to me.
Wow. Yeah, if you talk to golfers, like I work with a lot of guys that golf, Paul, John Flaherty, Ken Singleton. Between innings, I always stand up and I do golf swings all the time.
Hey, listen, I love Half-Life. If I had more time, I'd play Half-Life constantly. It's one of my favorite video games. I'm not sitting there pretending to hit buttons and imagining different shots.
It's not a sport, though. It's different.
No, neither is golf, really.
No, it is.
Stop. No.
We have to take a break. We were told before the show we were going to be scolded, and you guys don't even care, do you?
I wasn't even looking at the clock.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Doesn't matter to you.
Nope.
Kay LaGreca will
talk
Mets,
for that.
Rosenberg and you right here on Yes at 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael Kay Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Michael Kay Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by Geico. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. It's also the kind of service you get. Good thing Geico's been protecting... or perfecting both.
That's right.
For over 75 years.
They protect, too.
Oh, they protect like mad. All right, it's time now for Diamond Notes on the Michael Kay Show. It's brought to you by our good friends at 2 by London, the engagement shop at London Jewelers. Let's talk a little Mets. They've won 5 in a row. And Francisco Lindor started to hit, as I've been telling you was going to happen anyway, because he's too good of a player. And the game in which he hit the home run... I guess he and Jeff McNeil had an altercation in the runway. And the only reason we know it is that the Mets network, SNY, followed all the team running down into the runway. Didn't see actual altercation, but the fact that there was one is because the SNY cameras followed. I think Conforto ran down. A lot of the other players ran down to break it up. Then after the game... Lindor and McNeil come out and they concoct a story. I saw a rat. I'd never seen a New York rat. And then McNeil said it was. I said it was a raccoon. And that's why they argued about it. It was so ridiculous that it was funny. And unlike other people, I'm not upset about it. Teams get into altercations all the time. This one happened to spill out where the public could see it a little bit. And rather than just be forthright, they decided to make a mockery of it. And again, I don't have a problem with it. But here's the deal that I have a problem with. And I don't know why this always happens with the Mets. So their interim GM the next day pretty much looks down his nose at what they did. I don't know why they went that route. That wouldn't have been what I would do. It's not something that we support. So he didn't like the fact that the raccoon story was made up. It was all over the back pages of the paper. But here's where it gets me, Don. The GM is saying he doesn't like it, which obviously means that Sandy Alderson doesn't like it. Rojas smartly is staying out of it. Then the next day, the Mets have rats and raccoons on the scoreboard. It's like there's different aspects of the organization working against each other. If the GM and the president don't like it, why are you making a mockery of it on the scoreboard on Sunday? Now, all that matters is that they win, and they beat a terrible Diamondbacks team three straight. And that, again, that's all that matters. And Lindor got hits, and they've made a joke of it. And he came in, he hugged McNeil on one of his Zoom calls and called it a raccoon. All fun and games. Again, it's not as big a deal as people are making it out to me. The only thing that stands out to me is that the GM clearly did not approve of it. But then the people that were on the scoreboard made it a big thing on the scoreboard yesterday. How does that work?
I'm going to tell you the difference. And the difference is Steve Cohen and his relationship with the fans. Because here's what I was able to take from it, Michael, because I'm actually both. I'm a member of the media, which is the hated part of the Mets, right? The Met fan kind of hates the media. They think it's all the media are Yankee fans. I get called a closet Yankee fan all the time because we do the show on Yes, and sometimes I actually rip the Mets, and sometimes I actually support the Yankees, and that doesn't fly in Metville. You know, they want the support, and they don't feel they get the support from the media. So they ripped the media and they defend what was a clown show Friday. It was. As a Met fan, I felt like Lindor finally has his coming out party, finally has that quintessential moment that we're all looking for, the Giambi home run in the rain against the Twins, right, Michael? We always refer to that. That's the moment that we have, and it's got to be clouded by all that other garbage. And it bothered me. But you see the Met fans all coming to support the situation, support Lindor, who they've been killing for the better part of a month, because they feel like it's their moment. They're going to support their team no matter what, because the people that don't like it are all Yankee fans in the media. So I'm sure Steve Cohen picked up on that and realized, hey, our fan base wasn't embarrassed by it. From a baseball perspective, a GM and a president can look at it. They're all old school guys, especially Sandy, and probably thought that that was embarrassing what happened, and especially the lie that was told after. But Cohen probably looked at it and said, our fans are supporting this. They're getting behind it. We're winning games. So I would not be surprised if Steve, who's really got a pulse of the Met fans because he follows them on social media, he hears the reaction from the fans and figures this is a chance to own the situation. Get away from the embarrassing part of it and own it. And they've won five in a row. I don't know if one has anything to do with the other, but they're in first place. So maybe this can become the thumbs down guy. Maybe this can become the parakeet on the elbow. This can become the fight in spring training between Keith and Darryl. We're going to own it. We're going to spin it. And we're going to try to use it as a positive. And I'm sure that all comes from Steve Cohen reading the room. And I think that's what that, I think that's why it went from embarrassing to now owning it.
But if Steve Cohen read the room, and you, let's say that's the case, why would Zach Scott say it should have been handled better? Why is Zach Scott, the interim GM, going up against the owner?
No, because I think...
But you don't have, but what I'm saying is you have to button up your stories.
Well, I think this was an evolving thing, right? I'm not saying that instantaneously it became something that they were going to own. It was a little over time, right? And then Saturday spills into Sunday, and win follows win, and now you're in first place. I don't think this was all something that happened immediately. I think they were reacting in real time, because put my fandom away and their situation. It wasn't a big deal, but it's still embarrassing that that happened. That two teammates get into a slugging match and then come out with it, concocting some completely unbelievable story. But at the end of the day, the fans support it. They won the game. They won the next day. They win the day after that. They've won five in a row. They're in first place. And the guy that got into the fight's actually starting to hit now. So, yeah, I think both could be true. You could be embarrassed by something. You could be against something. But then at the same time, try to spin it into a positive. That's the miracle of winning, right, Michael? Because if they were in the midst of losing five in a row, how do you think things would have been? You think they would have tried to own it then?
No. And I'll tell
you
one thing.
Do you think the fans would have supported it as wholeheartedly as they did if they had lost that game Friday?
No, not at all.
So that's all that winning is doing right now. It's the ultimate salve. It corrects all ills, right? And that's what happened here.
And I, if Met fans are worried about the two of them getting into a brawl, don't. I mean, Billy and Reggie had a fight on national TV in the dugout at Fenway Park, screaming at each other.
That's not an indicator. See, that's the thing. The fight is not an indicator to me of anything truly wrong with the team. In fact, you could argue that the way they responded to it shows it's a pretty healthy team. The only thing that irks me is just that every sort of little small thing that happens with this team turns into a big, like, goofy mess. That's my only issue. Right. Not the fight, but, like, why is it always such a thing? Is it just because we're here? Like, does this happen to other teams and we don't hear about it? Or does it feel like it's always the Mets?
Well, and let me just speak as a Met fan. A Met fan's probably out there going, because that's how the media spins it.
But I will tell you, Don, this is the second time you brought it up. I mean, the media so prefers the Mets over the Yankees. I can't believe that anybody would think that. Well, the media wants the Mets to win. They never root for the Yankees. You can see it. The columnists in the city have all been Met fans, starting with the great Mike Lupica, always a Met fan. All the columnists feel, I think, an affinity toward the Mets. Why would Met fans think the media is against them?
They're just reporting what's out there. I'm not saying it's right or wrong, Michael, but the Mets, you know, the Met fan, in which I'm one, always feels that, you know, second team in town mentality. All anybody ever talks about are the Yankees. Yankees constantly this, Yankees constantly that. And every time something goes wrong with the Mets, it becomes a big deal. And there are a lot of people that support the Mets because that's the alternate thinking, and the Yankees are the evil empire and all that. I don't think the Yankees are loved by the media by any stretch of the imagination. Matter of fact, I know there are people in the media that root for them to lose because it's a bigger story. But to the Met fan, they just feel like that they don't get treated with the respect. A lot of it is self-inflicted wounds. The media just reporting what happens is not anybody's fault. That they're reporting what happens. And the Mets have been embarrassing for the last couple of decades. But I think it's always been a rallying cry around all fans that the media is evil. The media exaggerates everything. I don't know if he's still on hold, Michael, but there was a caller. I'm just punching on my call screener now. Chris in Philadelphia. And if you want to go to him, who preemptively called, assuming that you were going to make it a big deal when you didn't even say anything yet.
Let's hear what he has to say. Chris in Philly, what's up?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
You got it.
I do have to say, based on your teaser, it seemed like you were about to tear them. And I was ready to jump down your throat, Michael.
But why would you assume that, Chris?
You know what? I don't. It's just
because I'm Yankee boy.
Because right, I'm not going to put words in your mouth, Chris. I'll let you finish. But I think that's just my point. We're on the Yes Network. Michael's the Yankee announcer, so the assumption's going to be that Michael is going to take the tack to killing the Mets. And I think a lot of Met fans, Chris, have that knee-jerk feel about the media that they're going to rally to the support of the Yankees and give them the benefit of the doubt, and the Mets never seem to get that.
Well, one thing about Michael is he also hates anything that's fun. So, like, the rat and the raccoon thing is fun. Like, he ripped apart Donnie Stevenson. Like, you know, when I get it, like, I don't think that was disrespectful to Chili Davis. Like, it was just a fun thing that got the guys going. And now this is another fun thing that got the guys going. And surprisingly, Peter, of all people, is the one saying, oh, why does everything have to be goofy and silly? Like, who cares? Let them have fun. If anyone was going to have that take, I thought it was going to be Michael. But the fact that it's Peter is just absolutely shocking.
Well, let me ask you this, though, Chris.
I hate the nickname.
Isn't it weird, though? Isn't it weird that the GM doesn't like it and then the team promotes it on their scoreboard? That's the weird part.
You know, I think that you're 100% right on the nail that, like, Steve Cohen is, like, very in touch with social media. And he sees, like, the fans, like, are just happy. Like, who cares that they got in a fight? Like, then they started hitting. You know, McNeil wasn't doing too great either. So, like, I think that you're right that Steve Cohen sees that and he knows how to play into the stuff. Because right. he even did the tweet about Donnie, like, oh, he's the cheapest coach we have or whatever. You know, like, I think that it's all Cohen.
And Chris, I might be wrong about this because I've never met Steve Cohen. I could be completely off base on this, but I wouldn't be surprised if Steve likes the contradiction where the baseball people didn't like it and then he can support it from afar. And that all bases are covered, right? Like, so, hey, the baseball people thought it was disrespectful, but then we kind of owned it, so now everybody can be happy.
Yes, exactly. It's like playing both sides, you know?
Right.
And I think that that kind of controversy is good for the Mets. It keeps, you know, it's not like, you know, this is a Yankees town overall, and that's definitely a chip we have on our shoulder as Mets fans. But it's like, finally, like, the Mets are are, it's like, you know, 2015 again. Like, they're an exciting team with Steve Cohen here. And I think he knows that, and he wants to keep the headlines positive from the fans.
I don't know if you saw a tweet that he had. I think it might have been on Friday. He's actually quite clever. And I think he's running his Twitter feed alone, Don. So they have this Pete Alonso burger that they sell at Citi Field. And it debuted, I think, on Friday. And a fan complained. It's got everything in it. Right. It's a huge burger. It's got some like fish tartar sauce or whatever. It's a bacchanal of meat. And so some fan complained, it better be great. It's $16.50. And Cohen retweeted and goes, come on, it's one penny of calories. Not that bad. He gets it. He's got kind of a quick wit. And I think, again, it's all going to be fun and games until they lose and people start taking pot shots at them. But maybe they don't lose this year.
I don't want to sit here and like be educating people, but luckily, because I've been around for 53 years and been a fan of this team for 45, I kind of been there and done that. That's kind of the image of the Mets, Michael. It goes back to Casey Stengel in 1962.
Who?
They were the fun team that kind of made fun of itself. Because you had the Yankees that were corporate, right? Yankees, all they do was win. Very corporate, very buttoned up. Pinstripes were like a pinstripe suit. They were Wall Street. And the Mets were the fun-loving, kind of lovable losers. And they kind of did things differently. And they had mascots. And they had different things that other organizations wouldn't do because they had no other choice because they were a losing organization and they were trying to win fans over. And that kind of set the stage for how the Mets have always been perceived, has been kind of the offbeat, wacky kind of stepchild to the Yankees. And when they're winning, they can be right there as popular as the Yankees. But when they lose, that's always been kind of their thing, right, Michael? Yankees are corporate, buttoned up Wall Street. And the Mets are kind of the common, it's in their song, you know, with the Meet the Mets, with all the different people that are loving this team. And with that comes disorder. With that comes sometimes disorganization and a lot of losing. And I think that's why the Mets kind of always gone about things and always been perceived differently than the Yankees have been perceived. And a lot of it was by design. Go back, Peter, and look at Casey Stengel. It was a clown show. And I mean that affectionately. He had a team that was going to lose 120 games. So what was he, Michael? He was the clown prince of it all. That's not a way a professional organization should be run, but that's the only thing they had. Remember, they went after the older players, right? The Colt 45 got all the young players. They got all the former Dodgers and Giants.
And Yankees had Yogi Berra.
Yeah, it's good. And that's how they attract. And that's how they, Peter, that's how they built the fan base. They certainly didn't build it from winning. They just built it by being a kind of a fun, offbeat, minor league type of feel until 69. And then they kind of hit the mainstream. But that's always been kind of the cut of their jib, right? That's how they've always been.
Let's go to Doug in Long Island. Doug.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
All right. My take on this is I don't understand why you say it's weird, because this isn't a yes or no cut and dry answer. Now, I like what the Mets are doing. The old Wilpon organization would have buttoned this up and would have waited and came out and told everybody what to do. I actually love the way Steve Cohen has handled a lot of things so far. When they were caught in Bauer, how he said some people are different. It is the way it is. The way he embraced the Bobby Bonilla thing. And they let guys, they let Zach Scott have his opinion. They let the players have an opinion. And I think the way they showed the freedom towards the general manager and the players to have their opinion, it's all right. And to me, it's not a big deal. These guys spend more time together when the season's on than they do with their families. You know, if you work with guys, I've had guys I play ball with. There's disagreements and arguments at work with your family. Oh. And you know what? It happened. There was probably a lot of tension because, you know, Pete Alonso, Jeff McNeil, a lot of these guys only knew Chili Davis. And they, you know, whatever happened, happened. And I like the way they handle it. I like the, you know, if you've got a problem with a guy, I'm not high-fiving that guy a half hour later after we win a game. And they were high-fiving each other. So whatever happened, happened. The players handled it. If it went to a press conference and they came out and said, listen, we had words, there would have been who started it? Did anyone punch? And they didn't want that coming out. So as maybe people view this as a clown show, I look at it like, listen, no matter what they said, if they came out clean, they were never, ever going to be stopped questioning about it. This was their way. whether it was a good one or a bad one, and that's an opinion for people to have. But to me, I don't have a problem with it.
Doug, here's what they have going in their favor, all right? No media is allowed in the clubhouse. You're never going to find out what happened via Zoom. Obviously, some beat writers might have phone numbers and stuff like that, but there was a way to handle this without it being a clown show.
Oh, absolutely.
Listen, it happened in the family, and that's the way it's going to stay, period. Don't even ask any more questions about it. And since the press doesn't have access to the clubhouse, it would never have been found out. It might not ever be found out. Instead, you come out with the raccoon thing. Again, I have no problem with the fight. People that are together 180 days a year and spring training, you are going to get on each other's nerves. Don and Peter and I, we get on each other's nerves a lot. When you're around people constantly, you will get on their nerves. Sometimes something will break out. So that's what happened. I have no fight with them fighting in the tunnel. I think it was a little bit silly to come up with the raccoon thing. You couldn't come up with a better story than that. Could have just denied that anything happened. Hey. Nothing happened. We went down to look at something.
The fact that they've got up from this, Michael, is because they've won.
Correct.
Because I don't think any of this, even by the fans, would have been received as well as it has
if they had
lost on Friday and lost the next two games. Believe me, they would be all over Lindor, booing him even more. But he had the big night. They held on. They won the game on Friday. They win Saturday. They win Sunday. And now it's something that they can rally around. I think they got out from under this because of the fact that they've won. And that's the ultimate. That's the ultimate salve to everything that's going to go wrong. And that's why it's worked. And I do agree with the caller. I think Steve Cohen having fun with it has made it less of a thing. But it's more less of a thing, if that's a right phrase, because of the fact that they've won five in a row.
Well, those are Diamond Notes brought to you by Two by London, the engagement shop by London Jewelers. Pick or design the perfect engagement ring to fit every budget. Visit Two by London at the Americana Manhasset, East Hampton, and Westfield World Trade Center. Jacob DeGrom goes on the IL despite a clean MRI. We all think it's a good move. We'll break that down. Also, a lot of complaints from Major League Baseball players about the release of Albert Pujols. I wonder what they really would like to see happen. 1-800-919-3776. It's Kay LaGreca, Rosenberg, and you right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, big win for the Knicks yesterday. I was able to get home from the Yankee game and watch it in the second half, and they were extraordinary. I don't think that's hyperbole. They played great defense. They made big shots. They grinded. They played a team that was at full strength with both of their stars wanting to win the game. There was no load management issues whatsoever. And this is the game, or the type of game, that a lot of fans said, is this a game that the Knicks could win? A lot of people, and Frank Isola was on with us last week, and he said, remember, you know, in an NBA season, you're not always going to play hard all the time. And I think the Knicks play hard all the time, and that's their advantage. Well, they came across a team that played hard, that wanted to win, that jumped out to an early 10-0 lead, that led in the second quarter, and then the Knicks said, no, not tonight, after losing two straight games on this West Coast trip. Now, all of a sudden, they are 3-2. They play the Lakers tomorrow with LeBron James, and all the reports are that James practiced hard twice, and there's nothing wrong with the ankle that will prohibit him from playing, so that's going to be a good test for the Knicks. Now, how big was this Knicks win, and are we just being hyperbolic? Well, Brian Windhorst was on Greeny and said this is the biggest Knicks win in years.
I think that was the biggest win they had yesterday in about 7 years. I'm trying to evaluate it, and maybe I'm forgetting something, and I'm not a ad nauseum Knicks guy, but that was an incredible victory. Not only because of the standings, they're trying like hell to hold on to four, but to play a game like that, the Clippers were full power. I mean, they didn't have Serge Ibaka, but they had Paul George and Kyrie, full power coming at them, rested, wanted that game, And the Knicks had to have it, game four of a road trip, and they won it. To get that victory just says so much about how far they've come as an organization. That was I have to qualify to saying it was a regular season game, but it was as big of a regular season game as the Knicks have won in recent memory.
Now, here's Jeff Van Gundy, and he's just amazed at what we're seeing. He was on KJZ and raved about this Knicks team.
Thibodeau, what do they have, 38 wins right now, and they were predicted by Vegas to have 22.5.
Right.
It's astounding. He and Julius Randle, to me, have put together a season for the ages. And I think Leon Rose, what he was able to do in getting Derrick Rose so cheaply, he's been their second most important player. Alec Burke and Quickly, they've got terrific perimeter depth. So I think the components for overachievement, everybody gets to share in the credit. But Thibodeau has absolutely gotten them to defend every night and play unselfish, sound basketball.
Can't say it any better than that. And now the magic number is 2 to stay out of the play-in game. So any combination of Knick wins totaling 2 or a Knick win and a Celtic loss, and the Knicks are guaranteed at least the 6th seed. Now, they want to finish 4th or 5th. Obviously, 4th is where they want to be because that means they'd have home court advantage in the Garden against the number 5 seed in the first round of the playoffs. If they finish 6th, then they finish 6th. They've got a harder first-round matchup then. It's probably going to be against either the Bucks or the Nets, and that's a first-round matchup in which they probably lose. And I've been saying this for the longest time. Unless they finish in the 4th spot, it's going to be a one-and-done postseason. Now I'm going to say something that may be done, and Peter will jump me on.
I love
to. I still think they lose to the Nets and the Bucks. I don't think it's going to be easy for either team. Even if you get back Harden, the Knicks are going to make them sweat. They're going to make them work for every single basket. Nothing's going to be given away. Now, if the team, the Nets or the Bucks end up winning the first 2 games, maybe the Knicks have a little bit of a collapse mentally, emotionally, whatever. Maybe. But I think the Knicks are going to be a tough out no matter who they play.
Well, do you mean they're going to make them work? Because they will make them work. They're not going to make them sweat the series. Like, they're not. I don't think there's a moment if the Knicks play the Nets where the Nets are going, are we going to win this series or not? They're going
to
make them work.
Take one of the
game.
First 2 on the road
to make them sweat in any way.
Here's the scenario: the series would have to be even after it started. So you either get the split on the road, or you lose the first 2 and then win the 2 at the Garden. You're not going to make them sweat unless it's 1-1 or 2-2.
They're not even sweating at 1-0 if the Knicks come out and win the first one.
No, well,
now they be sweat. Now, Don, if the Knicks go up 1-0 and they're up 10 in game 2, then you could have a moment of sweat.
Well, you're going to have a little anxiety going into game 2, however. But that would suggest, because here's the thing, is that I think the Knicks will be taken seriously, okay? Because why wouldn't you take them seriously? They're a legit good team. But to sweat would be like something shocking. Like, I would be shocked if they took game 1. Right? Or I'd be shocked if they got the split on the road. That'd be pretty significant to beat the Nets in Brooklyn, to beat them, to beat the Bucks in Milwaukee. But unless you're even, like 1-1, 2-2. Like, I don't know if they're sweating if they lose game 3 up 2-0.
Well, I think they will know they're in a fight. And I think that the Knicks' best chance to win a game would be the first one. Because those teams are going to be very, very flush with confidence. Well, we're playing the Knicks. They were supposed to win 22 games. Yeah, nice season. But now when it counts, they're going to wipe them off the floor. So maybe they could catch them sleeping in game 1. And any team that loses game 1, as Peter said, they're going to sweat a little bit. I think the Knicks will lose a first-round series to the Bucks or the Nets. But I think they'll make them sweat more than I thought they would, because by beating the Clippers yesterday, they have shown that they can beat anybody in any given game. Now, 4 out of 7,
that's
I don't think
thing.
They could do it.
See, that's the thing. And again, I don't think this is pouring cold water. I mean, I would really think this for any of the teams. Listen, if Atlanta got the 4 seed, if Miami got the 4 seed, that's still a lot of heavy lifting, because clearly there's a drop between 3 and the rest of the conference, right? These are the top 3 teams: Sixers, Bucks, Nets. In whatever order, and the Sixers look like they're going to lock up 1. So Nets and Bucks would be the possible teams they could play. In order to make a team sweat would be, we might lose this series. And to beat them 4 times, that's a lot. Yeah, any given night, Michael, right? They've proven they could beat the Bucks. They hung with the Nets the last two times they played them, right? They've beaten good teams once. Can you do it in a series? And also, we're talking playoffs here. That's a great win for the Knicks. It meant a lot more than the Knicks than it probably did the Clippers. Right?
But they went for it.
You know, but the Clippers wanted to win the game, but would the Clippers lose four of a possible seven to the Knicks? I don't think so. But one game, yeah. But, hey, just judge it for – just be in there. You know, you're in there, you're playing with them, and then who knows what could possibly happen. It would be a bad job by the Nets, by the way, if they took the Knicks lightly. I mean, you played them a couple of times here down the stretch and barely beat them. I'm sure they're paying attention to what the Knicks are doing. If the Nets get caught with their pants down in game one, bad job out of them. I am not going to sit here and say if the Knicks beat them in game one, it was because the Nets didn't take them seriously. Come on, what would the Nets be thinking? How would they be shocked by the Knicks right now? They should be very much aware of what the Knicks are.
Let's go to Frank in Croton. Frank, talk to us.
Yes.
Hello.
I have a different take on the playoffs.
Okay.
It was the first. I've been a Knicks fan since 1947. And it's the playoffs are the furthest thing from my mind. You know what I'm thrilled about? We went from being one of the three teams at the bottom of the league to one of the top three or four teams in the entire league because they have two guys on the contract that weren't even on the floor yesterday. Robinson is a big-time center, and they got a broken foot, and you're overlooking the fact that they also signed a very good point guard from the Spanish League.
Yeah, he's not going to play probably this year.
What's under contract right now to the Knicks puts them about three or four teams maybe below a championship team.
Well, but Frank, there's a couple of things here. I don't think the guy from Spain is going to play this year. It doesn't seem like Thibodeau wants him to play until he gets indoctrinated into the system. Number two, not even looking for the playoffs. The playoffs are four games away. How are you not looking for the playoffs? The Knicks are making the playoffs. How could you not? Yeah, well, you should enjoy the season. This season has been glorious for Knicks fans that have seen terrible basketball for 20 years other than a couple of years. I think they made the playoffs three times in 20 years. But to say that you're not looking for the playoffs – I don't understand why you wouldn't be. Isn't that part of the fun? Who are they going to play? How would they match up? You could still enjoy the season.
See that to me, like, again, this is going to be going back to last week. That's just somebody that doesn't want to dare dream, right? They just want to be no, I'm sorry. You have a chance to be the four seed, home court advantage in the first round of the playoffs. And I know home court's a little dubious now because of the pandemic and all that, but come on. So you're telling me if they didn't win another game the rest of the way, lost the last four games of the regular season, got swept in the first round of the playoffs, that you would be content with that? No. Michael, if they get the four seed, you could be winning some games. They might not beat the Heat. They're not going to get swept. They're not going to get swept by the Hawks. And if you did, I think you'd be rightly disappointed.
I think they'd beat the Hawks.
I think they should beat the Hawks. They'd be favored to beat the Hawks.
Yep. Joseph in Brooklyn. Joseph.
Hey, guys. I wanted to say, if they go seven games with, and let's say they get the sixth seed, all right? I know for you, Michael, you're like, that's impossible for them to win, like, to go to seven games. But if they did, it would be like winning a championship for me. I'll take that. I'll take that in a heartbeat. In a heartbeat.
No, if we realize where the Knicks came from and coming into this postseason, we don't think that they would be able to beat the Nets. If they took the Nets to a seventh game, that would be more than a Pyrrhic victory.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
That would be unbelievable. And then the Nets would sweat. The Nets would be sweating tremendously on the Barclays Center court.
No offense to them, Michael. If the Nets went seven with the Knicks, then they're probably not getting out of the next round.
Yeah, that would show us they are not the best version of the Nets that we thought they could be.
Now, you could fall asleep and toy. No team wants to have to play a game seven. If they have to play a game seven against the Knicks, that would mean the Knicks were playing toe-to-toe with them.
Oh, if they play an elimination game against the Knicks, that's a problem. That is, and also, I'm sorry, I mean, I'm so excited by the Knicks. They're definitely the team I want to watch, and I'm most excited to watch in the playoffs. I do not see that, Don and Michael, being a realistic goal.
I don't either. It could be a goal. I don't think
you,
it's
you,
a realistic
you can
outcome.
Aim for it, yeah. Not realistically.
Mustafa in Yonkers. Mustafa.
What's up, guys? Been a long time.
Yeah, how you doing?
Time. I'm all right, man. This is the best I've been as a Knicks fan in a long time.
I bet.
And listen, it's let's not get carried away, but it's a little different this year. It's just there's
well, different
there's
than what?
With,
well, they're in the playoffs.
I
that's
mean,
what's
look,
different.
Of course, that a definitely. But this is a team where you could see the camaraderie, and you could see that they're a little bullyish. Okay, they're not going to back down. And for us to go seven games, that's already a championship. Okay, but they listen. Somebody needs if they're playing an all-star caliber player across, and he gets hurt, we're praying on that. This is how much of a Knicks fan I am. I hope there's no circus around what they're doing. So, James Dolan, if you listen, don't come to the game. We don't need a distraction. Let
he's
them
been
ball.
At every he's been at every game this year.
Let them ball. Playoffs, stay out of it. Let them ball. We don't need no distractions, no attention. It's New York's time. We've been down as a city for almost 2 years. And as a Knicks fan, a decade. Let them ball. Let us have peace with this basketball right now because they're playing as hard as they can.
I'm not
this is a diehard Knicks fan.
I get it, but I'm not quite understanding what you're saying. Let them ball. Is he going to like insert himself as a point guard? He's been at every home game. He's been on some road games.
Well, I think
too.
He might be inferring to like what happened with the Rangers. What is he?
Well, I don't think he's going to fire Leon Rose before
no,
the playoffs.
He's not gonna,
that would be a weird choice.
He's not going to do anything now. Something in the offseason may happen if he wants to accelerate things or whatever. But no, he's going to leave everything alone. And just as shocked as I would be, guys, if the Knicks went seven games with the Bucks or Nets, I'd be just as shocked if they got blown out in four straight. I think they will be competitive in every game. They may win a couple. Now, I don't think they're going to go seven. I'm not even really sure they're going to go six. But wouldn't you be surprised if they played four and in all four games they lose by 20? I'd be shocked by that, too.
I would be shocked if they got blown. I would not be shocked if they got swept.
Well, no. Yeah, that's – listen, they could get swept, but I would say that every game they'd have a chance to win. I'd be shocked if they got swept and were just out of it completely.
Right.
That would go against everything that they've been since the All-Star break. What,
and usually,
would they get blown out twice?
In big games, in big playoff games, the better coach is going to figure out a way to steal a game. So, let's be honest. You go up against the Nets, Thibodeau is a much better coach than Steve Nash. He can coach circles around him. Now, Nash can rely on Mike D'Antoni or whatever, but you know, you don't have time to make the game speeds up for a manager or coach in a big game. So, Thibodeau is going to have the advantage there. So maybe you steal a game that way. I think that Thibodeau is better than Budenholzer.
But also, I don't know how much any regular season game can apply to what that experience is going to be tipping off first game of the playoffs. It's going to be a completely different animal to a lot of those guys. Now, to a guy like Rose, he's been there, done that. And I think that's what's going to help in that room. But there's going to be a lot of guys who think they know about the playoffs. Then when they get there, they'll realize it's a completely different animal.
Julius Randle has never played in a playoff game.
Right.
Ever. RJ wow. Barrett, we know, hasn't. Quickly hasn't. So, I mean, you have a lot of neophytes. Derrick Rose is going to have to show them away, and he hasn't been in an inordinate amount. Now, before he got hurt, they were going to go to the finals, the Bulls. But so he certainly has played in playoff games, but he lately doesn't have an inordinate amount.
But it does feel like it's another opportunity to show how great a move it was to get Derrick Rose.
Yeah.
He's been so good down the stretch here when it really counts, and you wonder how valuable he'll be in the playoffs for this team, in spite of the fact that he's not like a playoff legend or anything like that, just his general experience.
Let's go to Daniel in Franklin Square. Daniel.
Hi, guys. Quick question. Who do you think would have home court advantage if the Knicks versus the Nets in the playoffs in the Barclays Center? I think it would be the Knicks, personally.
I think
it'd be close, which I mean, the fact that I think it would be close, Daniel, would take away the home court advantage.
But I think in the pandemic situation, that because their season ticket holders will have first dibs, mm-hmm. and I don't think a Net fan's going to give up their tickets to the Knicks, makes it probably harder for Knicks fans to get into the building. They'll find a way because Knicks fans are passionate. But if you got 18,000-19,000, it's a different story. But with this small number, with all the things, the hoops you have to jump through to get the tickets, the only way you're going to get them, I think, is those season ticket holders selling them, and I don't see that happening. Do you?
They could. It's amazing what money does.
No, but not every seat's a season ticket, right? So you're going to get a lot of availability for Knick fans to buy tickets. But how many fans are going to be in the building?
Well, right now there's hardly any. I mean, what was it, like 3,000? So yeah. I don't know if they'll have it, just like the Islanders just got a bump up for their playoffs. I'm sure the Knicks and the Nets will.
I would think, I don't know this for a fact, I'm just guessing, but I would think that the Nets probably have 9,000 or 10,000 season ticket holders, right?
I don't know. What I don't understand is why every vaccinated fan can't get in. Well, even if it's 20,000 people, if you show a fully vaccinated card, why can't you have a full house?
Because they are already saying that they want 3 feet for vaccinated people.
No.
That's what
you vaccinated people could sit cheek by jowl. It's those that are unvaccinated. Those that are unvaccinated have to sit with social distancing. So
once 3 feet.
That's for non-vaccinated people. The Yankees and the Mets, starting May 21st, are going to have fully vaccinated seat by seat sections where you could jam the sections together. So if you could get 20,000 people with vaccination cards, why can't you have 20,000 people in there?
I don't know. This is where I get confused. And they still have to wear a mask, though, right? But that doesn't matter as far as the capacity is concerned.
Does that make sense to you? If you're vaccinated, why can't you have as many people as you want?
Yeah, these are the optic things I don't understand.
Because no place is offering full, they have vaccinated sections. But we're getting to the point now, there's enough New Yorkers that you can get 20,000 vaccinated people that are basketball fans that want to see a playoff game.
I read today 53% of all adult New Yorkers are vaccinated.
Right. Now, but this is the world we live in. So with that, whatever the number ends up being, let's say there's 8,000 people in that building. I would think the Nets have close to 8,000 season ticket holders who would get offered the first shot at the playoff game. Now, some of them may just want to make the money and sell it to Knick fans. It probably is going to be harder for Knick fans to get in. Normally, I'd say the building would be 50-50. That's usually how it would work. I don't know if that'll be the case with the pandemic. I still think there might be more Net fans than Knick fans. But still, not a complete home court advantage for sure.
No.
Knick fans will find their way in.
The point is, if it's not a home court advantage, then you've completely squandered the fact that you have an extra game there. I mean, you have to make the visiting team feel like they've come into a cauldron of hell. And if it's 50-50, that's not a cauldron of hell. Peter, you know what a cauldron of hell is, right?
Well, it depends. Go ahead. What's your definition of a cauldron of hell?
Where it's so loud that you feel like, they're about to come on the court. Like the guy Jorge from California wanted the Astros taken off the field.
That's the cauldron of hell.
Right.
Right.
I've heard some people describe Mike Puma's phone line the same way. But this is a situation where if you can get a building that's even to a... I'm trying to decide the level that you could get to where it makes a huge, huge impact. Because I think the Garden, more than any other building in these playoffs, if you put a few thousand people in, will be a huge, huge difference maker for this team.
They've been starved. They've been starved for this sort of game.
And not just COVID starved. Two decades starved.
No, 2 decades of good basketball.
Oh, they get
starved.
In there. Now, Matthew Blinter, who is a fan of the show, author as well, tweeted, 3 feet for fully vaccinated people at the Coliseum. So that's got to be the New York.
3 feet for.
Now, listen, we don't want to do a COVID vaccine show.
No. But the reason I'm bringing it up is if you have to have 3 feet even vaccinated, then you can't get a full building.
But I'd like to get Governor Cuomo. Why? You're fully vaccinated. Why. Well, why is there 3 feet needed?
I'm just living with the reality of if that's the case. This is the way it was at the Coliseum. 50% of sales will go to vaccinated people, 3 feet distancing. So then you can't have a full building.
So let me get this straight. So Jody and I are vaccinated. So if we decide to get, Higgy with it, well, we've got to stay 3 feet apart.
If you do it publicly, where people can evaluate.
Do you often describe your sex life with your wife with a nickname for Kyle Higashioka?
Yes, I do.
Okay,
I do.
I just want to be sure.
Sometimes I'll go getting Kyle with it, but I just think Higgy with it,
Well, because Higgy's hitting.
Yeah.
You want to work with a higher percentage than Sanchez.
As long as you don't get boony with it, you know what I mean?
Wow. Let's towel off. 1-800-919-3776. It's Kay LaGreca, Rosenberg, and you on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoons starting at 2 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.